Welcome in On The Mark on a beautiful Wednesday. I'm Mark Carmen. This is Jake Valerius. We got a great show planned for you today. We're doing a lot of NBA, and we're starting with the Golden State Warriors, the defending champs. And the question I think we got to ask your team, are the Warriors in trouble? Steph Curry, yes, cleared to come back, but he's got four ankle injuries on the season. One false step, this could be a problem. Jake, Durant is out. Even Draymond Green is getting kneed in the private parts, which is causing problems. He's missing games. And Klay Thompson's got a fractured right thumb. So everybody thought the Warriors were going to win the NBA title. And right now you've got a red-hot Rockets team is going to be the one seed. And you've got this guy out in Cleveland who's playing some pretty good basketball. So I ask you, as we start out here, Jake, are the Golden State Warriors in trouble?
No. I know it's the boring answer, but they've put themselves in a situation where basically they're innocent until proven guilty. And I'm looking at some of these injuries and I'm thinking, these are the sorts of things that when it matters, they're going to play through. They know they can't get the one seed. They're taking it easy. They're giving guys extra rest. I mean, Draymond Green, he has kneed in the balls, and then he misses game time with a sore shoulder. Yeah, I mean, this is some Greg Popovich-level stuff in some cases where they're just giving guys rests. They're maybe a little banged up. Let's take 2 weeks off, come into the playoffs, feeling fresh, feeling good, and cruise through.
All right, hold on. Let me rewind back to Steph, okay? They're 13-8 without Steph. 13-8. 40-10 with them. And the guy's having a great year, 26 a night, doing his thing. Four ankle injuries, man. Four. NBA playoffs are extremely physical. There's no way in my mind, I think this is logical thought here. Can he get through the playoffs and after taking 2 weeks off where they, quote-unquote, strengthening the ankle, and all of a sudden it's going to be fine? I think logically along the way here, we're going to have another ankle injury, and then he's going to have to play through that. He's not going to have the luxury to sit, depending on the series and whatnot. Maybe early in the playoffs he will. Maybe not. I mean, the West is so deep. I just think it's most likely that we are going to deal with this in the playoffs. And the last time they lost, albeit up 3-1, it was because they were a banged-up Warriors team.
It's fair to be concerned, I think, about Steph's ankles. It's obviously been a thing historically with him that has been a problem most, you know, earlier in his career and then most notably in the finals a couple seasons ago. But all that you can do when you're making predictions is say, what do I know about who's going to be healthy? Right now, we're being told that Steph's going to come back this Friday. We are going to assume that he's going to be healthy coming into the playoffs. Even if he isn't, even the Golden State Warriors with a Steph at 75%, which is, let's say, what he was in 2016, even them with 75% of Steph Curry and the rest of their big four are the best team in the NBA, in my opinion. That's not a question. You said they lost to LeBron. Okay, but first of all, I think that Cleveland team were probably better than anyone they're going to face this time.
Well,
and second of all, they added KD, as you know I'm
right.
about to say. And he's pretty good, too.
Yeah, so. Kevin Durant's a pretty good basketball player, yes. But okay, let's talk about Kevin Durant. He's got a rib cartilage fracture, okay?
Yeah, okay. I mean, I'm not a doctor, but.
Well, okay, but his quotes are, it hurts when I get out of bed. Obviously, then it's not feeling great when I'm playing basketball. Now, this is probably going to heal, but let's go playoff basketball. You know this dude's got the rib cartilage fracture. Going to be physical.
Sure. And this is my problem, when we focus on injuries, right? I know KD and Steph have some negative history, but who else has negative injury history? Chris Paul. What is the Rockets' record like when you compare them with Paul and Harden compared to just Harden? It's a significant difference. And if you're saying, would I take rather a banged-up Warriors team with some question marks about injuries, or would I rather take a banged-up Rockets team with some question marks about injuries, you've got to go Warriors every time, right?
Right. Yes, 100%. But right now, the Rockets are not banged up. I mean, Chris Paul is on the court. James Harden's playing like a madman. We'll get to him in a second here. But I think there is a real question right now. This is not just on the mark talk here. I think to me it's pretty much wide open right now. I think you look at how Cleveland's playing. I still expect the Cavs to come out of the East, but okay, you want to say Toronto or who's got the best record? Okay, I highly doubt it. But the Rockets are playing out of their skull. I mean, last night's game in Portland, James Harden is hitting ridiculous step-back threes, which basically he's been doing all season long, but they're on a whole nother level, and they've got a great system figured out with Harden's in, Paul's out, Paul's in, Harden's out. They're both together. I mean, it's,
I think the Warriors have kind of lulled us into a false sense of security. We had a similar discussion about the Cavs last season where they were absolute garbage for the last 2 or 3 weeks of the regular season. They lost the one seed and we were like, I mean, they are the best team on paper, but maybe they've just dropped off. The intensity isn't there. Maybe they can't turn it around. And it's the same thing with the Warriors. They've been cruising for most of this season. They still, by the way, have, I think, the best defensive rating in the NBA and the second best offensive rating. Their net rating is better than the Rockets. And yes, there are injury concerns, but everything we're being told is the big four are going to be healthy for the postseason.
Right.
If they're healthy, they win. It's that simple.
Right. And I agree with you that if indeed they are all healthy, but I'm doing the logical math in my mind. Steph Curry to me is a high probability that at some point he's going to get hurt in the playoffs. If you had this much trouble all through the season, again, I said this before, but logically I think it's going to creep up. Yeah. And are they good enough to get through at that point? I think it's going to be interesting.
How about this? I would still take the Warriors if they're missing only one of the big four. Doesn't matter which one it is.
But they're 13-8 without Steph. Now again,
yeah, in the regular season, it's such a different dynamic. They don't care. They really don't. It's hard to overstress how little they care about this until the playoffs, obviously.
All right, let's move on to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Big news for the Cavs this week before we get to LeBron and his performances, which are just off the charts. Ty Lue is reportedly coughing up blood. He's taking at least a week off. He's not going to coach the team. Larry Drew is in there right now. He's saying a week. That sounds a little bit more serious than a week to me. I'm going to get a nutritionist. I'm going to start working out. These things take time. Are they going to miss Ty Lue? I mean, LeBron's the coach anyway, right? Does it even matter who's coaching the Cavs?
I think that's unfair to Ty Lue. Obviously, you know, I have literally no idea what's going on with the health situation. Hopefully, I'll come back soon, whatever. Seems like he's taking the steps he needs to take care of it. But I think that's unfair. There's a lot of coaches who have worked with LeBron, and they always tend to just get they're an afterthought, right? And that's fair enough. LeBron is that good that he is more important than the coach. I think anyone would agree to that. But having said that, it's not an accident that Ty Lue is the guy who is stuck around. It's not an accident that while the team has been in absolute turmoil at times, Ty Lue has always been a steady presence. He's been willing to confront LeBron when necessary.
Bingo.
He's been a welcoming, you know, arm around the shoulder when necessary. LeBron has turned on a lot of people in the last couple of years within that organization, and Ty Lue has never been one of them. Well, and that to me says a lot about his ability to manage the ego, his ability to sort of keep people on side. And, you know, we like to glorify the coaches who are drawing up crazy wild timeout plays, you know, Brad Stevens type guy. But a big part of coaching is just managing people. And there's a ton of evidence to suggest that Ty Lue is extremely good at that. You know, it's not an accident that the Cavs, despite whatever the hell they do during the regular season, cruise through the playoffs every year. And it's a big part because of him. So, you know, I got a lot of time for Ty Lue, and I think they do miss him.
See, and I would actually, you know, when you look at the whole body of work, look, he came in late in the season and did call out LeBron in his first year. And he brought that team together, and somehow, some way, Golden State was hurt, and Draymond got kicked out of game five, you know, missed, what was it, game, he got ejected in game four, didn't play in game five, whatever it was, he missed a game in the finals. My memory's going, this is a bad sign for me. But they won the finals, and Lou got, you know, he deserved a whole lot of credit there. Who was their coach even before? And he's like slipping my mind too. David Blatt.
Now what, in Europe or something?
Right.
Like, that's the thing, though. That's what bothers me about it. I mean, this is an aggressive comparison, but you have someone like Phil Jackson, who won, obviously, a ton of titles with superstar-laden teams. But no one's like, oh, Jordan's running the team. Phil Jackson is held up to be this coaching god. And he deserves that credit. But why do then we not give any credit to a guy like Ty Lue? It doesn't make sense to me.
So, okay. I mean, I would still say, like, at the end of the day, Mike was coaching that team. But
Exactly. But people don't hate on Phil like they hate on Ty Lue. Would you agree with that?
I
I mean, they hate, on him for other reasons.
They hated on David Blatt. I don't think they necessarily hate on Ty Lue, but I do think
he's completely dismissed.
He is minimized 100%. I don't think he gets like hate on, but minimized for sure.
Yeah.
If we're drawing that distinction. Okay. LeBron James, let's talk about him for a second here.
Pretty good.
Third oldest player to have a 40-point triple-double. Did that against the Bucks this week. And let's do our weekly. We're going to do this. We're doing this every week. I mean, might as well. Where should LeBron go update? And the reason why I think it's worth bringing up right now is you've got – he's putting up a 40-point triple-double. He looks as happy as a clam in Cleveland. And so I'm like, why would you even consider leaving that situation when you're having the best year that he's had in, you know, maybe in his career, I would argue, and you're having a great time? I think things are looking pretty good in Cleveland right now for LeBron.
Yeah, I still think it's kind of, we need to wait and see what's going on after the playoffs. That's kind of the situation here. On top of that, I would say that Houston's recent resurgence, just becoming unbelievably good, has actually increased the chances he's going to go to Houston. You know, we've read a ton this week, all sorts of people offering analysis of this Houston ISO Bowl, where they're basically playing this old school, super slow game with Harden and Chris Paul. And even if Paul left, if LeBron replaced Chris Paul in that system, that's outrageous. They are absurdly good. If they could somehow keep all three, even another level.
Right.
So I think, obviously, you know, credit, you know, LeBron's going to be unbelievable wherever he goes, but I think this sort of discussion we're sort of having now, where people are thinking, are Houston really good enough to challenge Golden State? I think that may sort of maybe be turning LeBron's head. I would certainly be fascinated to see it.
Yeah.
I still want to see him go to the Spurs, but that's just me.
Let's have the MVP conversation.
Okay.
And it's not even a conversation for seemingly everybody else. James Harden is going to be the MVP since you brought up Houston. James Harden's having an incredible year, and he's still not the best player in basketball. Nobody would argue with that. LeBron James is averaging the most rebounds in his career at 9. He's averaging nearly 9 assists, 8.7, which is also a career high. He's scoring 27 a night, which is the most since he was a Cav before he was a Miami Heat, 2009, 2010. He started with a horrendous roster. They had a huge winning streak. Then the whole thing fell apart. Now they're right in the thick of the Eastern Conference. Best player in the game. And then there's Harden, who is having a phenomenal year, and Houston's winning a ton of games. But nobody would take LeBron over James Harden. Why is it such a unanimous thing? LeBron's having the best year of his career, and he's getting like no love for the MVP.
So I see where you come from, and I don't think he should, but I would enjoy LeBron winning it. I like LeBron, and I think it would be nice for him to get that extra MVP. Having said that, it's a regular season award, right? It's not the award for who's the best player. It's the award for who is the best player over the 82 games of the regular season. And a couple of things stand out to me when you look at that. Their stats across the board are pretty much, you know, their offensive stats are pretty much a wash. LeBron's a little higher in assists and rebounds, but Harden's better from three. His, you know, PER and his win shares are higher. I think that's pretty much neck and neck. But two things stand out to me. First, Houston have a significantly better record. Being a great player is good. Putting up huge offensive numbers is obviously good. But if you're not contributing to your team winning, they are to some extent devalued.
How many games do the Cavs win without LeBron?
He's contributing to them making the playoffs. They're obviously better for having him in the team, but you know, Harden's on pace for what, a 60 plus win season. He is the lifeblood of that team. His skill set, his unique skill set in isolation basketball, his ability to shoot the three, has allowed Houston to adopt what is, you know, in many ways a completely sort of revolutionary new form of basketball, this sort of combination of pace and space offense with ISO basketball. He's allowing that to happen. And in the same way, you know, obviously LeBron wins Cleveland games all the time, but he's not making the team as good as Harden is making his team overall. The second point I would focus on is defense. The Cavs are the 28th best, or the third worst, in other words, defensive team in the NBA.
He doesn't play D.
In front of I think the Kings and the Suns, which, you know, let's not even go there. Meanwhile, Houston, they've jumped up from last season. I think they were 18th in defensive rating. This season, they're 10th. A top 10 defense, a big part because Harden said, finally, after many years in the NBA, hey, I'm going to maybe put a minimal level of effort in on defense. And Harden now is a respectable defender on a team that plays good overall team defense, and he's leading them to a 60-plus win season. And so for me, of course, if we're going into the playoffs, give me LeBron James every day of the week. But we're not going into the playoffs. We're talking about a regular season award for the 82 games of the regular season, and Harden's body of work, taking into account all aspects of you know, offense, defense, total wins, overall team success, style of basketball, Harden for me has done more.
Let me rewind back to last year. Russell Westbrook.
It's a regular season award for this year.
I understand. Russell Westbrook won the MVP award last year.
Which I disagree with.
They got smoked in the playoffs. They lose in the first round 4-1. Okay? He averaged a triple-double. They're like, oh, we got to give it to him. He averaged a triple-double. Yeah. They didn't win nearly as many games as everyone else. Yet, here's LeBron. He's averaging an assist.
Yeah, but you're not going to convince me by telling me Westbrook should have won the MVP or shouldn't have won the MVP last year, because I didn't think he should have won the MVP.
Okay.
So those numbers did not persuade me. So don't tell me that those numbers should make me change my mind about LeBron.
Okay, let me try another way then, if I may. He has – you would agree that James Harden has a Robin, correct?
Has a what?
A Robin, a Batman, a Robin. He's got Chris Paul, right?
Sure.
LeBron.
Sure.
LeBron, completely ridiculous by Cleveland. They traded Kyrie Irving, lost his Robin to Boston, and then lost Robin Jr., Kevin Love, for you know, a quarter of the year to a broken left wrist. He hasn't had anyone, and he's still and you throw in the huge trade for players, the whole thing. He's doing this by himself. I mean, they're right in the middle of it. Like, doesn't that add up for any how is he not even in the conversation? Oh, second is Anthony Davis, and then you got to. I mean, are you kidding me?
This guy
has been preposterous this season.
LeBron always gets punished for his reputation. He's compared not to what he's doing or other players in the NBA. He's compared to what we've seen from him in the past. And looking at what he's done in the past, this is a guy who's routinely winning, you know, well over 50 games, usually over 60 games, a one seed. And not doing that stuff obviously hurts him. People have just become so desensitized to his greatness that they don't give him the credit he deserves. I absolutely agree with all of that stuff. He should 100% be in the conversation. Of course he should be in the conversation. But I think what Harden is doing is, like, really game-changing, you know, generation-defining basketball. Stuff he's doing is stuff that will have ripple effects around the NBA for a long time in the foreseeable future. And to me, you know, that deserves credit. He was also robbed by Westbrook last year, so, you know, let's give him an extra shout-out for that.
We're going to see 10-year-olds doing step-backs.
They're changing the rules now to make kids not do Steph Curry three-pointers.
Just to give James Harden some love here, because I'm not trying to hate on him. James Harden is the number one scorer in the NBA the last 5 years, if you combine them all.
That's decent.
He's number five in assists the last 5 years. This is all ahead of LeBron, by the way. Number four in minutes, and he's shot the most free throws of anybody in the NBA. Pretty ridiculous run for James Harden. All right, let's do some NCAA tournament to wrap up here. We're doing, as we go into the Sweet 16 tomorrow, what is the best story of the NCAA tournament? We've got some great candidates here. The 16 seed, UMBC, the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, beating one seed, one overall seed, Virginia. We've got Loyola in the Sweet 16 and their outstanding advocate, Sister Jean. And then we've got Nevada, also in the Sweet 16, coming back from all sorts of deficits, and Mariah Musselman, the daughter of head coach Eric Musselman, and her interview skills and the sweetness of that. So those are three, and you can, if you would, feel free to give me your best story of the tournament, because this has been a wild tournament, and I've loved it, and congrats to the Loyola Ramblers.
I'm all about the Retrievers, UMBC, Virginia. Main thing for me, like, I feel we've kind of, I know it was a big story when it happened, but it wasn't dramatic. They just crushed them. That game wasn't close. It wasn't last-minute buzzer-beater three from some, you know, last guy off the bench who no one's ever heard of. This wasn't sort of your typical sort of March Madness romantic underdog story. They just absolutely dominated them. I mean, I don't know what Virginia were doing, but to me that has just, like, not received any of the credit it should have got. They destroyed them. It wasn't even close.
Well, and what they did, like, for me, if you're going to make the UMBC case, because I think it's just a huge bummer that they go and lose to Kansas State in just a terrible game, which they could have won.
But that's perfect, though. That's the true Madness ending.
I mean, the school is known for their chess team before this. They're great teachers, college, and they do a lot of other stuff off the court, but this was not it. But they have a media relations guy, Jason Seidel, who's tweeting from the game. Their Twitter account goes from 5,000 to over 100,000 followers. I mean, people were going nuts. So, like, that was all cool. But then I sort of think they stepped on themselves by losing in the second round. Great story that night. Can I talk about the Loyola Ramblers here?
Yes, you may.
Okay. First of all, they're in the Sweet 16. They have the great Sister Jean, who's 98 years old. She's a nun. She's in the locker room talking to these guys, saying, hey, here's what you need to do. And by the way, I'll say a prayer too for you. She has got a bobblehead that is from years past that they're trying to reinstitute into sales. Their merchandise is up 500% according to Fanatics.com, which is an outstanding website if you're looking for places to buy things. So, and you've got the buzzer beater, Dante Ingram, 30-footer in game one, right? That was an incredible shot. And then Clayton Custer with 3.6 left. They've got 12 straight wins to get by Tennessee. This is incredible. Everything they've done is you're heading game winners. You got Sister Jean. You're in the Sweet 16. First time since 1985, 33 years. Loyola, the Ramblers, ramble on.
Are you a Rambler?
I mean, I grew up close enough to Loyola that I feel like I can adopt them for right now.
That sounds convincing.
So, but and then the other one, to give Nevada credit here, to beat Cincinnati, they were down 10-0, they were down 18-4, they were down 27-10, they're down 65-43 with just under 11 minutes to go. Comeback match is the second largest in the history of the tournament. The only one that was bigger was 2012 BYU and Iona, right? And they held Cincinnati without a hoop the final 5 minutes and 45 seconds. I like the fact that you've got two twins on the team. They transfer from NC State to Nevada, Wolfpack to Wolfpack. How often do you see that there, Jake? Huh?
Not often.
But Mariah Musselman.
Mariah Musselman. Great name.
Doing interviews. With Mariah Musselman and Loyola, Sister Jean, there's going to be an interview moment.
It's going to be very...
The three-year-old and then the 98-year-old. This is what the NCAA tournament is all about.
Yeah.
You're sticking with the Retrievers?
I'm sticking with the Retrievers. I think the Sister Jean has been a little overplayed.
A little too much?
A little perhaps becoming contrived at this point.
No, say more about that, because there is like a Sister Jean movement.
I mean, I don't want to throw out wild claims, but, you know, conspiracy perhaps comes to mind, media conspiracy.
Like what?
Well, I don't know. You know, before these tournaments, what, CBS or whatever, they look at the, oh, what's the interesting angle we can find? And they're just hitting this thing so hard. Like, we get it. She's an older person, you know?
You think that, like, are you bothered by, like, that there's certain people that think the Loyola is connected with the Almighty and that's why they're winning?
Yeah. I mean, am I bothered by that? I don't know if bothered is the right word, but I won't say what the right word is.
Okay. Well, Sister Jean did not ask for this attention. However, she is loving it.
She's loving
it. She
is absolutely. No problem with Sister Jean herself. Just sort of the industry that has developed around her is troubling to
yes,
me.
Yes, and she should enjoy this. You're 98 years old. All of a sudden, you're, as she said, an international star. They're talking about her in Mexico.
Is that true?
That's true.
I guess Mexico is a different country.
I grant you that. I'm sure they're talking about it in Europe, too.
Are they, though?
I think they are.
I think you've been to Europe recently, Carm.
Sister Jean's international. She's national. She's everything. It's a beautiful story. Ramble on.
Ramble on.
Elite 8.
I do like that. That's a good
one. Elite 8. Going to beat Nevada. Yeah. All right. We're with you every Wednesday at noon. Thanks for checking out On the Mark. Appreciate everybody's comments on the show today. It's always fun to go back and check out what people have to say. We will see you next week, which will be we'll be heading into the Final Four, and it'll be opening day the next day. How about that? Baseball,
about time.
Good to see you, buddy. LeBron James, you're the MVP, even if you don't get the award. You were it last year, too.